Hello, and welcome to the CISC podcast. In each edition of this series, you'll have the chance to meet a CISC staff member or other educational professional involved with the CISC community. We think you will find these podcasts of great value as a variety of people share their unique insights in their respective fields. Now, please enjoy this edition of the podcast as our host, Bob Kretzmer, speaks with our guest.
As school districts throughout the state of California continue to struggle with the COVID-19 pandemic, a district's legal counsel plays a paramount role in guiding school administration officials through the maze of guidelines and recommendations. Districts in Kern County are fortunate to have school's legal service, and in particular, Abigail Offont, attorney at law, to help them through these challenging times. I had the opportunity to sit and visit with Abigail on November 16, 2021, to discuss the impact of the current active guidelines on our school districts. Abigail is a Bakersfield native. She is also a graduate of Bakersfield College and California State University, Bakersfield. After completing her legal education at the University of Pacific's McGeorge School of Law, Abigail worked in the field of land issues and regulatory law before coming to school's legal service. At school's legal, Abigail has focused on COVID-19 issues. We hope you enjoy listening to our program, as we believe you will benefit from Abigail's detailed understanding of where we are and how we got here since the pandemic began in March of 2020. Well, Abigail, it's really a privilege to sit down with you today and talk about just where we are in the pandemic and what things might look like going forward. But I appreciate your being here and welcome to the podcast.
Absolutely, Bob. It's my pleasure.
If we can, let's review for a moment the initial order that came from the governor back on March 4th of 2020. This was the executive order N-2620. What powers did that order give the governor?
So the most important thing about that initial executive order was that was the order where the governor declared the state of emergency. So that's the most important thing to remember about that, because with that order, that was where the governor invoked the California Emergency Services Act. And with invoking the California Emergency Services Act, the governor is able to issue orders and regulations that he deems necessary to deal with the state of emergency. So he doesn't have to go through the legislature. It puts the powers within the governor to be able to deal with the emergency, because we all know the legislative process takes a long time to be able to deal with things. And in a state of emergency, you need to be able to be nimble and move quickly and be able to deal with the emergency as things unfold. So in that initial order that he issued, it did things like suspend the contracting process so that he could enter immediately into contracts to be able to get the products that we needed to be able to deal with the safety issues. So like masks and gloves and things like that. So that were some of the things that were in that initial order that was issued on March 4th. But that order also gave him the power to do what, if you remember back to the stay-at-home order, that was issued shortly thereafter, that initial order gave him that power as well. So the powers under the Emergency Services Act are broad, but it's because of that need to be able to deal with the emergency circumstance. That's what the California Emergency Services Act gives the governor, that power. Once that state of emergency is declared, the governor has broad powers to be able to issue orders, to be able to deal with the state of emergency, and it's vested within the governor once that state of emergency is declared.
Is that order still in effect?
So the state of emergency is still in effect. And if you'll recall, there have been various changes that have happened since that original order was issued back on March 4th of 2020. And there have been subsequent executive orders that have been issued since then. And we were in that time period of the Blueprint for a Safer Economy that had that colored tier system. And that tier system was rolled back in June of 2021. And there have been changes. And the governor's issued multiple executive orders that did various things in the time period that we've been dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic. So in June 2021, he issued an order that rolled back various provisions of orders that had happened since March 2020. But what he didn't change, what has not changed, is that we're still in a state of emergency. So the original order from March 2020 remains in effect. Various provisions have been rolled back, peeled back from that order, but the state of emergency itself remains in effect.
So in effect, the governor still retains that nimbleness, and he could, for example, he could even roll back some of the subsequent orders that were issued in June of 2021.
He could. So we could go back to more stringent policies if the governor deemed that that was necessary based off of health concerns. If we see another peak or another surge or things that required more stringent public health restrictions, that could be imposed because we are still in that declared state of emergency that has not gone away. Even when the governor rolled back that blueprint for a safer economy and pulled back those restrictions, that did not eliminate the state of emergency in the state of California. That is still, we're still in that declared state of emergency. So that power for those orders to still come in, that power remains in effect.
Has there been any date certain given as to when the state of emergency will end, or is that ongoing at this point?
There has not been, to my knowledge, there has been no statement or no projection as to when that state of emergency would end, no.
Now, the August 11th, 2021 State Public Health Officer Order, it requires verification of vaccination status among eligible K through 12 school workers, and it establishes diagnostic screening testing of unvaccinated workers. School districts were required to be in compliance with this order by October 15th of 2021. Some of our listeners may be asking where the authority for such an order originates. And can you shed any light on that question, Abby? Does that come from the state of emergency order back in March of 2020?
Slightly different. This order was issued by the state public health officer, and so it's a different basis of authority. The state public health officer has the authority to issue orders to prevent the spread of communicable diseases, and COVID-19 is a communicable disease. So it's an order that was issued by the state public health officer, and because of that category, the order has the force of law. So it's the same type of concept, but it's a different basis of authority for the issuance of the order. It's not based off of the state of emergency. It's based off of the nature of the disease. So COVID-19 being a communicable disease, that's what gives the state public health officer the authority to issue the order. But issuance of that order gives it the force and effect of law. So it's something that the school districts have the obligation to follow, and why that's different than the authority that the governor has under the California Emergency Services Act is that Emergency Services Act could be enacted for any type of emergency. So you could have an emergency from wildfires that create a state of emergency, or a flooding condition that creates a state of emergency. It's not just a healthcare emergency that could cause the governor to invoke a state of emergency. It's broad ranging what a state of emergency could be enacted for. This health order related to communicable diseases, that's restricted to that environment. And that's the nature that order regarding the vaccinator test order that was issued for school workers, that's limited to that realm. And that's the authority that order was issued under.
And do you know, Abby, has there been any date certain placed on that public health order? Does it remain in effect continuously, or are we looking at a time limit on that order?
The order itself does not have a date certain, doesn't have an end date listed.
Okay.
In the order.
Since that time, there have been a number of guidance documents that have been issued by the California Department of Public Health. One of the more significant recent documents is dated August 23rd, 2021, and it is addressed to the school leaders, and the subject is requirement for universal masking indoors at K-12 schools. What is the basic substance of that guidance, and does it remain in effect today?
So that document is different in terms of it was a letter that was authored by Dr. Tomas Aragon, who is the state public health officer. It was issued at a time in our state where there was increasing dissension regarding whether the mask mandate, the requirement to wear masks in the schools for both the adults and the students, was in fact a mandate, or was it guidance? And did local school districts have any discretion about whether or not to enforce it? That document was specifically issued by the state public health officer, Dr. Aragon, to outline the duty for school districts to enforce the mask mandate and the consequences that may follow if the mandate is not enforced. So it was really to set the level the playing field, if you will, because there was a lot of debate going on around the state about, is this a mandate? Is it not? Can we as a school district decide that we have discretion to enforce it or not? Because there was language in the school's guidance that different districts were interpreting that, okay, well, we have the discretion to decide whether or not we are going to choose to enforce this mask mandate. And so in response to that, and that was going on at various degrees up and down the state. And so in response to that, rather than try to change the guidance or try to get people to understand the guidance differently, this letter was issued to clarify to the school leaders, this is a mandate, and you as school leaders have an obligation to follow it, a legal obligation to follow it. And if you do not, there are severe consequences for failing to follow it. And the letter outlined point by point what the consequences are for failing to follow it. So it was trying to direct the school leaders, this is a mandate, failure to follow it has consequences. So it wasn't guidance in terms of how we think of the school's guidance for how you need to operate the schools while we're in this pandemic. It was literally trying to guide the school leaders to point them in the right direction about the mask mandate.
And we've heard so much in the news about school superintendents being challenged with respect to the masking mandate. But if I'm understanding you correctly, Abby, the order issued by Dr. Aragon makes it clear that superintendents really have no discretion. They are required by his authority to enforce the mandate. And as much as we may disagree with that particular step, our superintendents are just obligated to follow Dr. Aragon's declaration.
That's correct, Bob. Yeah. The guidance comes from the state, and this mask mandate is from the state level. That what is at the school district level is the obligation to enforce it. They don't have the discretion to not enforce it. It's a mandate that comes from the state. And for those who object to it or have concerns about what that guidance says or what that provides or what that means for their children, the objection should be elevated to the state level, and they should be contacting their state representatives or their state contacts to register their concerns about that. It's not something that the school districts or the school superintendents can affect change about. They do not have the discretion about whether or not to enforce it.
Well, thank you for that clarification. Another important piece of recent guidance from the California Department of Public Health is the document dated September 1, 2021. It's addressed to all Californians, and the subject is COVID-19 Public Health Guidance for K-12 Schools in California for the 2021-2022 school year. This document addresses concerns regarding school-based extracurricular activities. How does this document help our districts understand the parameters for keeping these activities safe for our students?
So I believe the document you're referring to is the broader schools guidance document from the California Department of Public Health. And that document, the guidance document, is actually updated on a fairly regular basis. And it's updated so regularly, in fact, that I have a calendar update, calendar reminder set for myself to check it. because it's updated so regularly and they don't have a system to push out to you when it's been updated. So actually the most recent date that it was updated was October 20th. Because they do, as things change and evolve in the pandemic, they update it, and they also update the frequently asked questions that are associated with that document. The frequently asked questions were last updated just on November 15th. So it's truly an evolving situation, and the California Department of Public Health tries to stay on top of all of the evolutions within the pandemic and how that affects the school environment so that they're providing up-to-date guidance to the schools about how to enforce this. But the key thing to remember about the school-based extracurricular activities is that that guidance applies to all activities on the school campuses, whether or not they occur during school hours or after school hours. This means that any activity that occurs on a school site is subject to the restrictions contained in the school's guidance. So whether it's a school activity or another entity coming onto the school property and conducting an activity. So that's something that's key, I think, for the schools to understand, is that it doesn't matter whether it's a school district activity that's conducted on the campus or if they have an outside entity that's coming in and conducting an activity on that campus. That outside entity is subject to all of the restrictions that are contained in the school's guidance if they are conducting an activity on the school site. And I think that's important for the districts and any entity that's coming on their property to conduct an activity to understand. If they're on a school district property and conducting an activity, they're subject to all of the restrictions that are contained in the school's guidance, and that includes the mask mandate. So that's something I think it's important for folks to understand. So with respect to sports, because that's been a question that's come up for a lot of folks, and it took a little bit of time for CDPH to provide guidance about sports activities, and particularly in our community, sports is a very important thing. And the guidance clarifies that masks are required for all persons while playing indoor sports, unless wearing a mask during play has been determined to pose a choking hazard by a well-recognized health authority like the American Academy of Pediatrics. But they provide an out for that in such instances, the sport would have to be conducted outside, or weekly testing would have to be conducted even if the students are vaccinated. And our Kern County Public Health Authority has confirmed that they support the weekly testing option. So that's an important out, an important option for our local schools to be able to have, is that they can still have the indoor sports activities without masks as long as they're conducting the weekly testing.
So if I understand correctly, Abby, a local high school basketball team in Kern County, the coach would be able to put his players on the floor unmasked indoors, provided his team members have gone through the weekly testing protocol.
Correct.
Okay. Very good clarification. Thank you for that. I think that's important for our districts to know. And your other important point about outside groups coming on to conduct an activity, that also. Now, would that guidance also apply to vendors who are coming onto a campus to conduct a landscaping operation or a painting operation at a school site? Would that same guidance apply to those vendors?
So that's not a school-based activity, but there's the school guidance applies to all adults on a K-12 property. So it wouldn't fall under this section of the extracurricular activities, but it would fall under the all adults on a K-12 property. So the mask mandate would apply because they would be an adult, because it applies to a paid or unpaid adult. The mask mandate applies to a paid or unpaid adult on a K-12 campus. So in terms of whether or not that would apply to someone providing a service on the campus, the mask mandate would apply to them.
Thank you. Recently, on October 1st, 2021, Governor Newsom's office announced that students will be required to be vaccinated for in-person learning starting the term following FDA full approval of the vaccine for grade levels K through 6 and 7 through 12. It would appear that we will not see this requirement take effect until the fall semester of 2022, if at all. Will this order be similar to other vaccine requirement orders that we see related to other diseases, for example, such as polio?
The vaccine requirement that the governor has announced would be a future order, will be similar to other vaccine requirements. The difference will be that this requirement is anticipated to be the result of rulemaking by the California Department of Public Health rather than legislation. This would mean that there will be a personal belief exemption, and this means that parents will be able to opt out. And also, like with other required exemptions, a medical exemption will also apply. And that's how it would differ. And I try to remind folks that right now what we're talking about is an announcement that the governor has made of an anticipated future requirement. It's not something that's currently in place. It's something that he has announced will come in the future. So when it gets to that point, when the FDA full approval has been issued, then it would trigger the CDPH to initiate a rulemaking process. And that rulemaking process in and of itself has a built-in mechanism for public comment. And after that whole rulemaking process has been completed, then there would be a requirement for the school vaccination to be able to have that vaccination for in-person learning, and then it's instituted. So a lot of people are very, because of the governor's announcement and because the manner in which he did so was so fervent and strongly worded that there will be a student vaccination requirement, a lot of people feel like it's imminent and it's going to be happening immediately. And I encourage people to take a step back and recognize that this is something that if it does happen, it will happen in the future. And there are multiple things that have to happen before that vaccine requirement would actually become a matter of law that will have to be complied with. And there will be an opportunity for formal public comment to register, officially make their voices heard, to say, I do not agree with this. I do not think that this is something that our children should have to go through. There is a formal process for that as part of the CDPH rulemaking process that would happen after the FDA has issued its full approval of the vaccines. So that's part of what has to happen in order for that requirement to come into place. And also I try to explain to folks that there is a distinction between the CDPH rulemaking process and if it's done by legislation. It being done through the CDPH rulemaking process means there will be a personal belief exemption, that parents will have that ability to opt out. If it does happen through legislation, if the vaccine requirement is enforced by legislation, there will not be a personal belief exemption, because the California legislature has already eliminated a personal belief exemption from the existing vaccination requirement in California law. So it's actually a better thing for parents if it happens as part of the CDPH rulemaking process, because they would have the personal belief exemption and the ability to opt out from it.
And can I ask, Abby, some do become confused or it's unclear for some what is meant by a personal belief exemption. We've certainly heard the term religious exemption, but personal belief seems to imply possibly something broader. Can you shed any light on that?
It is more broad. So it does refer to the parents' personal beliefs. So it can be broader than just a religious belief. It can refer to the parents' beliefs as to the vaccine's efficacy, the vaccine's not having a sufficient track record of success or information about the long-term impacts of the vaccine. It doesn't necessarily have to be just about a religious belief. A personal belief exemption would be broader than a religious exemption.
It could include
religion, but it's broader than religion.
And not to pin you down in any way, because I realize we've got to go through this process with the CDPH, but will a parent need to just state in writing to a school district official that they are rejecting vaccination because of a personal belief exemption, or will that be some sort of an interview process they go through? What do you envision that looking like?
My belief would be that they would submit something in writing. I do not believe that it would be any type of interview process, that it would be something that they would submit in writing. But we'll have to see how that plays out.
Sure. Well, we'll look forward to seeing how that develops. And then I want to ask, Abby, since you're so well studied in everything about COVID-19 and school districts, is there anything else that you think might be important for our listeners to hear from you related to this process, the current state of the pandemic, how it relates to schools that might be of help? I wanted to give you that opportunity.
What I always like to share with people is that the guidance from the state does change, and I recognize that. And I understand absolutely that that can be frustrating. It's frustrating for there to be a moving target that you have to constantly be pivoting and adjusting to, whether it's us in the professional environment that are dealing with the evolving guidance and interpreting it and explaining it to folks, or as parents at home trying to understand what this changing and evolving guidance means. But the guidance changes because the pandemic is evolving. It's not because the state is trying to make this more complicated for us. It's because the pandemic is evolving. And the public health experts are only trying to do right by our children and keep our schools as safe as possible so that our children can continue to learn in person. That's what they're trying to do. And I think a lot of the debate and consternation over these topics can be tempered with the recognition of the fact that everyone is starting from the same place. Kids being present in school to learn is the best place for them to be. It's just a matter of how that can be done safely. And so I think sometimes taking a step back to realize that we're all operating from the same place. We want our kids to be in school, learning, and being able to do so safely.
Well, Abby, thank you so much for your time, for your dedication to this topic. I think everyone in Kern County is benefiting from you and others like you that really do the hard work of trying to interpret these guidelines, these recommendations. It's not always easy, but on behalf of the Self-Insured Schools of California, I really want to thank you and know that we will continue to lean on you as gently as we can as we go forward. And thanks for taking the time today.
Absolutely, Bob. I'm happy to do so.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of the CISC podcast and greatly appreciate you listening to our show. Please check the CISC property and liability website at cisc.kern.org for a complete listing of podcast topics under the Property and Liability tab. Until next time, stay safe as we continue with the CISC mission of schools helping schools.
Production facilities for the CISC podcast are provided by KETN, a service of the Kern County Superintendent of Schools.